I am Virginia, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. And I'm going to quit coming to women conferences if you guys don't quit making me cry. Whew. This is heavy-duty stuff. I want to thank the committee, because I count it as a blessing and a privilege. I mean a special blessing to be a part of anything connected to women. I consider us as co-creators with God, and I'm extremely grateful that they invited me to participate. It has been a wonderful, massive meal for me. You know, when I look around and I see all of these people, and I think, God, you just outdid yourself, you know. He's just awesome. Now, don't get upset when I talk about God, new people, because I'm not trying to save any souls. I would not know what to do with them if I did. But I have to talk about God because he's done so much for me through this program. On May 10, 1931, I was born in Shreveport, Louisiana. On April 8, 1966, I was reborn, resurrected in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. God must have been sitting up there in heaven, and he looked down and he saw me staggering because I had moved to California from Nebraska. And he saw me staggering down the streets, and he said, my child is getting ready to die, and she ain't never lived. I'm going to have to do something about it. She didn't understand the Ten Commandments. She couldn't use those, so I'm going to send her over to some drunks. She will understand the 12 steps when they get through with her. Because, you see, I had spent a great deal of time, and I've got to go back to tell you what made me come in here willing to be made whole. I staggered beneath the burden of being a practicing alcoholic for a long time. Did not use any of the other drugs because I thought it was too stupid. I still think it's stupid. I think you're the biggest fool in the world when you go after something that costs $200 for one time. I think you're stark raving mad because after you put half of your brains to sleep, now you got to go back to the street and find some more money. Now, you see, all I needed was 47 cents for a short dog, for the new women, that's a little small bottle of wine. And if you drink enough of it, you pass out, so you get to rest. You don't have to stay on the run. But I know the humiliation and the degradation that comes behind that because I gained a PhD out there in the streets. And you don't have to get as sick as I got. I'm going to tell my story in a general way, what happened, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And nobody has to go as far as I went, but it's the only what it was like that I have. And I got no intentions going back getting another what it was like. Because it was real, real rough. It didn't have to be that way. I told you I was born in Louisiana, and I discovered some things in Louisiana that was not right. I discovered some things that was not fair. First of all, I had a mother who was a practicing alcoholic and sort of loose, you know. She was not a mother, so she left us with a grandmother. And a father who liked young things in short, tight skirts. So he went after his stuff. You know, and we were left there with the grandmother. I was barefoot and I was hungry and I was worn out. But I looked through the windows of a neighbor and I discovered that they had white lace curtains in the window and they had two little girls, little Creole girls with long pigtails and stuff. And I said, ooh, I'm going to get me something like that. One day I'm going to have me two little girls with long pigtails and I'm going to have me a husband. Her husband was handsome, and he came home every day in a Model T Ford, shining black Model T Ford. I'm going to get me a shiny black car like that, get me two little girls with long pigtails, and I'm going to do this thing upright. I'm going to have lace curtains at the window. Well, I did get two little girls, but I also got six more kids to go with it. So I fulfilled some of that dream, you know. White lace curtains at the windows. I had some white sheets at the windows. Men in shiny black cars, I had lots of them. I just didn't keep none of them, but I had them. And so you can see, in a general manner, I want to let you know that I didn't have a stage set for me. But that doesn't have anything to do with the disease called alcoholism. This is not Overeaters Anonymous. This is not Narcotics Anonymous. And by the way, I want to let you know, while I have an opportunity to this many women, I have a pet peeve in an AA meeting, and it is when we start chatting back and sharing in the reading. Because I used to sit in those meetings and I would listen for those words that God could and would if he was sought. And I thank God that I didn't come in at a time when there was unison going on, because I couldn't understand the words very good. And it may be fun, and I think it's a spillover from some other 12-step program, but whatever it is, we need to really understand that there's a sacred ceremony going on when there's a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous called. And God has called us together to save some lives this morning. The lady talked about us making history, but what we've come to for today is to witness the miracles. Somebody is going to go back and make it different than what it was before. Somebody is not going to accept the lesser degree. Now, I know I've moved about 20 miles ahead of my story, but it came up, you know. And I don't know where this stuff comes from, you know. Honest to God, yes, I do. I lie. Yeah, I know where it comes from. I love this program with all of my heart. And the reason being is the years that I skipped telling you any details about is that I spent some time, that lady talked about being a bag lady on the streets of Chicago. I spent some time progressing to the point that I couldn't get up and go to the liquor store in an upright position. Now you take that freeway out there and you imagine in Los Angeles, Manchester and Weston is just like a freeway at certain hours of the day. And there came that time where booze had almost killed me, and I was laying at home so very, very sick that I could not walk to the bathroom. And my husband looked at me at that time and he said, "This is the first time I've ever felt like leaving you for a few minutes." He said, "The babysitter will be here pretty soon. There's $2 on the dresser to get some milk and some bread for the kids. And you just lay here." He took me to the bathroom, helped me back to bed, and I'm laying in bed 5 minutes after he's gone, and I said, "Damn, I need a drink. I've been through a lot. I done suffered a lot. I'm dying now. But I've got to have one drink before I die, because I always figure if you're going to be something, be it. You know, be the best that you can be." So I looked at that $2 on the dresser and I said, "They don't need no milk, because milk ain't good for black folks, no way." You know, and I took that $2 off the dresser and I went to the store, and the market was across the street, a busy street. And I could not walk, so I crawled from my house to the corner, and then I crawled across that busy street just to get to my wine. And if that ain't commitment, I don't know what is. I was committed. And like I say, you would not have had to go down all them alleys and do all that stuff that I did. Now, I got drunk and sicker knowing that there's a God and a better way to go. And I knew that it had nothing to do with my poverty. In the back of my head, I knew that it had nothing to do with the poverty of my body or my mind or my physical environment. I knew that because my sister was raised under the same circumstances, and she never became one of us. And I knew that I was a disobedient kind of person and a rebel without a cause, and I was running a race, and I had no idea where the heck I was running to. I had to give up profanity, so you got the heck instead of the H-E double L word. Clancy thought it wasn't a good idea. And I knew all of this, you know. I'm going to back up one more time. I had a good experience when I was a little girl. And that experience was that God does exist. and he does answer some prayers. I'm like 5 or 6 years old, and my grandmother said, "Children, I have no food for you today. There's Miss Josephine just sent me word not to come to work today. So you're going to have to ask God to feed you. Now, you two little kids get on that side of the bed because you're sinless." And I thought, huh, lot she knows. I found out where the little boys play, and I went back to play with them. I had learned to steal peaches off of folks' trees and pop balls off their back porch so I can get a stage plank, you know. So, but my little sister said, she got on both her knees, and she was, "Please, Jesus, help us." My grandmother was on the other side of the bed, and I said, "Huh, I ain't getting on both of my knees, getting both of my knees tired. This doesn't make sense." She already said God knows everything, so he ought to know we're hungry. He sees everything, so he knows we ain't got no mama and no daddy. My mother died and my father split. And I saw no need to ask God to send me anything, because he wasn't going to do it no way. I said, beside that, he don't like, we used to be colored folks. I said, he don't like no colored folks no way. Told my little sister, and she whispered in my ear, "You better stop that. God's going to hear you." I said, "He ain't even listening." But in a few minutes, a deacon knocked on the door with a basket of food, and I almost peed in my britches. Because I knew then that if God heard them, he heard me. So I was aware of God hearing things while I'm getting drunk on the streets of Los Angeles. And I got drunk in the streets of Nebraska. You know, I know what it's like to be loaded and out of it. But I'm eternally grateful for every drunk day, for every drunk moment, for everything that happened to me, for the time that the guy put the 45 down my throat and said, "B, I'm going to blow your blankety-blank brains out. You don't take my new car and ride men up and down the street." You know, because I'd take whatever you had and use it and then send it back to you. You know, and I just did whatever I felt like doing, you know. And I thank God that I did all of that stuff. Because you get sweetly reasonable when booze whips the grin off your face. You know, when it wipes it off and won't let it come back no more. When you take your children to the hospital for surgery and you don't even know you've been there. And we're passing the hospital after I'm sober and my kids say, "Mom, that's where Glenn had his tonsils out." And I thought, "What tonsils?" "You remember when he was there, don't you, Mama?" I lied and said yes. But I don't remember it to this day. I had a lot of blackouts, and I thank God that I didn't even know what a blackout was. I became a deputy sheriff in L.A. County so that I could protect my right to drink. It is necessary to do something in L.A. because they take you to jail for drunk. You know, plain drunk walking, they'll take you to jail. And especially when you're stopping the police from arresting other people, telling them you saw the whole thing. I was drunk on the streets of L.A. during the Watts riot. Dangerous time to be a deputy. You know, dangerous time to be a drunk out on the street. But it was a glorious time because there was liquor everywhere. Folks were stealing it and I was drinking it. You know, thank God for the riot. Thank God that I don't have to single out my identification with a drug. And I want to caution all of you people that are alcoholics and you cannot put a comma where God has put a period. It's not possible. And the reason that I told you I didn't go on the other stuff is because I saw no need to. If I could have got 25, my friend was an other drug user, and she had $25 a week allowance. And I pictured what I could do with $25 a week to drink on. At 47 cents a bottle, I could have bought a case of wine, a package of beans for the kids, a carton of cigarettes, and we would have all been happy. So you see, it was not economically feasible, and I've always been kind of smart, so I knew that I couldn't do that stuff. But I want to caution you to get lost, not to get lost with the identification of the drug, because alcohol is a drug. And I have an addictive personality, so I am hooked and addicted to King alcohol while I'm doing all this nonsensical behavior and taking in this product that is killing me. And I finally got washed out and washed up. I know what it's like to come to with a train being ran on you. I know what it's like to come to in an alley, a public park, one morning bright and early, sun beaming down, and folks sitting there looking at you, your dress is up over your head, you ain't got nothing else on, and you say, what happened? And all you can come up with is you look up at the crowd and you say, if you ain't seen one, you don't know what it is. But what you felt like doing, what I felt like doing, was having the ground to swallow me up and not allow me to come up no more. Now, I tell you some of these bad things because I want you to understand where I had to go. You don't have to go that far. It ain't necessary. I got babies that ain't done half of what I done, and they are marvelously happy in this program, celebrating the heck out of life, you know. And it just knocks me out to see them not to have to suffer. I get frightened when they start talking crazy and acting crazy. I think, oh, God, don't let them go down that road, because they might miss it. And I don't want a single, I'm real prejudiced. I don't want a single woman in this universe to miss this program. I am so dumb that I think we all can make it. And the reason that I believe that, and I'm getting ready to tell you about what it's like in recovery, is that God made us co-creators with him. He did not look down at Adam and say, I think I'll give him a uterus and let him help me co-create this earth. He said, no, he needs a woman. And he built a woman. You know, and that's heavy-duty stuff to me. When I look at that, I don't want to be nothing else but what I am. It ain't nobody walking this universe that I want to emulate or be like. Don't want to change nothing on me. You know, I used to want to be like, what's that, Lena Horne. But I realized that I can do all kinds of stuff, and I ain't going to be Lena Horne. Nah, besides, she's old as I am now. So it's a good thing to be a sober woman in Alcoholic Anonymous. I came to you April 8, 1966, more dead than alive. I was so very ill that God did not allow me to pick out a sponsor, and I thank God that he didn't let me pick out a sponsor. He set the table for me, picked one out for me. I made the call to impress my then husband and children, to my father and my children, to impress him that I meant business, because some fool had called me on the phone and was telling me I was supposed to meet him last night, and I didn't show up. And I saw my husband on the other phone listening. I thought, oh, God, he's going to kill me this time. And I can't afford to take another beating because I got stitches on both sides of my head already. If I miss ducking, he'll kill me sure enough this time. So I went in and got on the phone as soon as he hung up. And I told him he had the wrong number or something. And I said, information, would you give me the number to Alcoholic Anonymous? I want to make sure he heard me, you know. And they did, and I called. Now, I knew about Alcoholic Anonymous before I came, and I had called a year before. And the guy said, well, just tell us where you live, and we'll come and pick you up. And I said, but I ain't ready yet. I don't believe in doing stuff before you're ready. And I spent another year getting ready, jumping out of windows with no clothes on and running down the street asking the neighbor for a robe, tearing up cars and coming to and almost dying 1,000 times over and over again. You know, get ready. If you ain't ready, get ready. The book says get ready. So I got ready that other year, and this time I'm on the phone, and this woman that I talk with is still sober in Los Angeles, and she made a 12-step call on me, and she brought a guy with her, and she said, told me enough about her drinking to let me know that she knew where I was. And I said, I'm going to look for some liquor that I have hid around here. If I can find it, I'll pour some of it out, because I would like to test my mind. If I could pour some booze down the drain, then I figured I had a chance. And when I found it, I said, I ain't going to pour this liquor out, but I'm going to pour this beer out, this Colt 45. Because this liquor, I'm a cheap drunk. I was real cheap. This liquor I can take back to the liquor store. And so I did. I poured two cans of Colt 45 down the sink. When I opened them up, the man that was with her almost died a thousand deaths. I popped the cap, and he said, oh, my God, she's going to drink it. I said, no, I can't drink it. I poured it down the sink. But I took the two bottles of vodka and bourbon, cheap bourbon, back to the liquor store. And the brother to the liquor store owner said, but she didn't pay for it. He said, she ain't never paid for nothing. Give her the money. Just give her the money and let her get the heck out of here. You know, because she's a bad acting woman, you know. And I was a bad acting woman. Call you all kinds of names. I could make up new names. Mix up two words and make up something new, you know. And so I began my journey. And they came to pick me up, and they took me to 9604 South Figueroa. Everybody says, did you get sober in the beach area? No, I got sober in the ghetto. I was a ghetto drunk, a hoochie mama. And I got sober in the ghetto. I am eternally grateful to the founders of Alcoholics Anonymous. I stand on the shoulder of giants, and you too are standing on the shoulders of giants. I got cold chills in the meeting yesterday, sitting there listening to Lil talk, you know, because I can trip back and I could see where they planted this foundation. And, you know, and I've been to the founding place, and I've looked at this thing through the eyes of the members that were here before I got here. Old timers are very, very necessary. I thank God for the newcomers, because they come in here and show me just, it scares the heck out of me. And they come in and show me just how sick they can get. And it takes me back. I have not met one yet that bypassed me. And I said, dang, this stuff is mean. This disease we got is vicious. You know, so I'm a serious drunk. You don't have to be as serious as I am. I'm going to learn to tell a couple of jokes. In fact, I got one for you right now. My baby told it to me from Nebraska. And she says that this is no reflection on your dizzy blondes, but I mean on you blondes. But this is a story about a dizzy blonde. And I guess she's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, because she said, she called the fire department. She said, come quick, my house is burning up. And they said, just how do we get to your house? She said, duh, the red truck. So that's the way I came to you. Duh. What is this thing? I'm a speed reader, so overnight I read chapter 5 and how it works. And I came back the next day to quote it to my sponsor. She said, you read the wrong book. They didn't say, here are the steps we memorized. They said, here are the steps we took. They didn't say, here are the steps we read. But you ain't ready for it, so just keep on coming back. So they cautioned me, you know, to take this thing easy and slow. And I kind of recognized I had landed someplace called the right place, because there were people here that looked happy. They looked like they had something that I had never seen and never thought possible for me to get, and that was peace of mind. I spotted that in my sponsor. She had a peace about her, an aura of peace. She had a sense of direction. She knew where she was going. She had purpose in life, and she had a husband that loved her. He didn't tolerate her. He loved her. And he called her his baby doll. I ain't never been called baby doll. And it just knocked me out to see what they had. I didn't think I could get it. I didn't think it was possible, but just maybe if I kind of hang out here. And then I heard a woman talking. She was sober for a long time, and she was crazy as H. She wore knee socks and a bonnet and a pinafore, like she was 10 years old. And she switched in every day, tall, slender woman, and she switched in every day talking trash. I'm blessed. Terry had on a shirt today, too blessed to be stressed, and that's the way she would be. Oh, I'm so blessed, I'm sober, and nothing else matters, and I couldn't stand it. Because you know how you land on the planet and you ain't got nothing going for you and you're tired, you're worn out from running that race. It takes a lot to stay drunk for a number of years. It takes a lot to stand the beatings and build up the tolerance that it takes to put half of your mind asleep, keep the other half awake so you can do what you got to do to get the stuff, you know. And so I was worn out and I was tired and I was lonely and I was rejected and I was scared and I was broke and I had a hump on my back that you wouldn't believe. I ended up getting pregnant 8 times and having 8 babies. You don't do that kind of stuff when you're scared of responsibility. You know, you don't add that kind of stuff when you don't want to be a mom in the first place. I ain't supposed to mother nothing. And I'm getting pregnant every year. If nothing else, I got fired from the birth control clinic. They say, you can't work here. You get pregnant every year. And so I come to you with that past, and here now you're trying to plant the seeds into me. And my sponsor started talking things that was totally foreign. She said, you're going to gain self-honesty. What drunk walks into the rooms wanting self-honesty? I didn't want no kind of honesty in my life. I wanted to figure out how to get by, how to get over with the least amount of pain. Now, I love that peace that I saw. I want some of it, but I ain't willing to do nothing to get it. You know, just give me some of it. And I'll sit next to the old timers. In fact, I might take a couple of them to bed and see if I can get me some. But I got to figure out how I can do this thing because I ain't got much left. And I knew I didn't have much left. And they would tell you to come to meetings, get ready every morning to go to a meeting. What time shall I get ready? Just get up, dress yourself and dress the kids. Send them to school if they got to go to school. If they don't have to go to school, keep them dressed. But I ain't got no food. I got to go find them some breakfast. Where are you going to find it at? I don't know. Well, stay home and wait for us. So they would bring just enough food for the kids. They never brought enough for me. 8 buns and 8 hot dogs. 1 small box of cornflakes and 1 quart of milk. Pour a little bit in each bowl. And they fed my children because I had no money to feed them with. And they took me to meetings every day and they told me what to do. Now, in the modern 2000, nobody can tell anybody what to do. I still tell my babies what to do until they build a foundation. And when they get that foundation built, I am delighted that they go on their way because a lot of them wouldn't be my friends no way. They would not have been a choice that I would have picked out. But I love them all with a passion. In fact, my husband said, when you die, they're not going to miss you because you got all these little Virginias running around. They'll cry for a week and then they'll start listening to these people, you know. Should I go today? I thank God. I hope it ain't today because I'm having too much fun. It's a glorious program. I came in here as an 8th grade dropout. I came in here not willing to do anything. The only thing that I came in here with was a little bit of willingness to be made whole. And I used to think that Jesus must have been off his rocker running around asking people, are you willing to be made whole? Now I find myself asking newcomers the same thing. Are you willing to be made whole? If you ain't, go find somebody else who will talk about your feelings and your emotions because I'm a sobriety woman. I'm a 12-step nut. You know, I'm nuts over the 12 steps to recovery because they delivered me from where I was. I don't have all that arrogance anymore, you know, although some of my babies disagree. But I have a lot of humility because when I sit back, sometimes I sit on the patio and I look around at the house. You know, I got the white house with the brick and the 2-car garage and the car that I always dreamed I would never get. I got a Concourse North Star 4-door diamond white Cadillac. And that ain't bragging because I got a cat like mine that goes with it. I want you to know that being delivered in this program is not an overnight stand. But for God's sake, get somebody, not a running buddy, get somebody that can sponsor you. They've been down the road, and they know when you get there, where you going. So they can say to you, you can't go no further down that road. You're fixing to get drunk or crazy, one. You're fixing to flake out, because I've been there. And I know when you're coming to, you can't come to all at once. Who wants self-honesty and why would I want self-honesty today? The only reason that I took that step is I had a little quiet, soft-spoken sponsor. She had a gentle voice, not like this big tenor voice I got. She had a gentle voice, and she was a kept woman. Her husband kept her, protected her from the streets of Los Angeles, so he brought her liquor home to her. Looked for that kind of man my whole life. One who would understand my needs of drink and bring it to me. Never found her. And I said to myself, how can this little old housewife woman show me how to live? She don't know nothing about living. She ain't never been on the streets. She ain't suffered the degradation and the humiliation that I have suffered. How can she show me how to live? And that's where you misjudge and you make your greatest mistake. I cannot identify with her. You better hope to heck you cannot identify with who you picked to sponsor. Because if you can identify with them, it means they're just as lost as you are. Now, self-honesty allows me to know that I need help and I need it bad. And when my sponsor explained to me that I couldn't stay sober without it, I took the step. Now, they bought me a thick tablet from the drugstore. She had me to write the 12 steps in this tablet, and she said skip pages between each one because she's going to want to go back. And I got a few days in this program, but I ain't getting it. I'm running to every old-timer meeting I can get to. I'm going up to people like Chuck C., and I said, Chuck, I feel like the hole in the donut. He said, child, don't you know without the hole, the donut would not be. I run and find Alabama, and I said, Alabama, I don't think this thing exists for me. I can't get this thing. She said, child, if it didn't exist, you couldn't want it. And I run over to the Nest, and I talked to a bunch of the old-timers there. And they took me to a lot of different meetings all over the city. I was not allowed to exercise prejudice on the street because booze requires full-time. You drink with Chinamans, Mexicans, white folks, black folks, green folks with pink polka dots on their face. You drink with them. If you be my kind of drunk, you drink with them. In Alcoholic Anonymous, I haven't been allowed to become prejudiced in the program because could you imagine me coming in here with all that sickness in me, with all that garden of despair planted, and I add some other crap on top of it? I'm an alcoholic and a what? I am totally screwed up when I say I'm an alcoholic. That means I got a problem. And you guys made it baffling because you said 5% is your problem. 95% is going to be left with you. You work on that one day at a time. That knocked me completely over for a loop. Because I thought the drinking was the 95%. That's why I could see that if that identification with the drug was that valuable, had it been 95% of my problem, I would fight all day long for deliverance to identify with the drug. But since it's only 5%, heck away with it. Now, my babies know that's great improvement because I got another word for that, you know. But I'm grateful to God that you gave it to me straight across the table. And she told me, you're going to get to the principle of self-honesty opens the door. You can't even get into the vault without the self-honesty. You can't even get into the arena without admitting and conceding to your innermost self who and what you are. You know, you got to come in that door admitting that you got your butt kicked. So I get amazed when they say, I've been a kept alcoholic. I'm a protected drunk. And how are you going to be a protected drunk? Somebody after the meeting, if you know how, show me. Explain to me, because I'm finding more and more that you can't be a protected drunk. Nobody could protect me. The man I told you left me at home in the bed half dead, and he happened to break and come back because he got so worried that I was going to die, and he came back and decided to wait for the babysitter and found me sitting on the side of the chair with a bottle of wine that I had crawled across the street to get. And I'm drinking, and he took it and busted it up against the wall, and he said, you're a slutty bee. You know, you're never going to be anything. You're going to die. Look at you. That's how I came in. So when you tell me take these steps, are you going to go back to what you left? Are you going to go nuts? Man, I'm willing to take the steps.
And that's the only thing I had in my favor, a little bit of wilderness. And so I began to take those steps, and some of the principles began to ease into my experience, like hope. Like I looked at this crazy lady in this pinafore, and I said, just maybe I could get some of that happiness in her eyes and on her face. Just maybe. I hope I could get that peace of mind she's got. Because she was crazy, but she was happy. She was nut as a fruitcake, but she was at peace at being a nut. And I was nutty, and I was not at peace. And so I bought step two. I came to believe that God could do something about all that stuff I wrote down. And by the way, you got to write it now, because it doesn't say here the steps we discussed, here the steps we talked about, here the steps we read. They say here the steps we took. So if you ain't took them, take them. You know, and then you'll get what's coming to you. And I got to kind of speed it up, because I'm moving through areas trying to pick out. I had an adventurous, drunken life. So it is hard for me to pick through, you know, because it was exciting. It was always exciting. Even when I was running down the street to get away from them people that was looking for me with the gun, because I might tell somebody was in there smoking heroin. I was running down a snowbank street, you know, scared to death. But that was exciting, because you got to get away or they'll kill you, but. So, you know, it was never boring, so it is hard to pick out. But I'm trying to skate through to give you, new people especially, something to hang on to. And in between us, because y'all are the most difficult ones, 10 to 15, you just as loony as a bug. Because it's sort of like you got a master's degree, and you're reaching for a PhD. But in basic reality, you're trying to figure out where am I and what's going on here. I feel better than I ever felt before. And of course you're going to feel love in a conference like this. It ain't nothing here but love. And God has poured out his blessings and his mercy upon this place and brought us together for such a time as this to share with one another. But it ain't for the purpose of your feeling good all the time. It's to prepare you to go back to battle. And it is a good thing. The lady said, get ready to contaminate other women. Everybody, everywhere I go, ought to be better off because I've been there. Anytime God takes a body like me and totally resurrects it and puts it in an upright position, I'm an eighth grade dropout, I'm an ignorant ghetto mama, and I was raised up lying, stealing, cheating, and running, having sex when I'm like 5 years old, being molested and enjoying it. I don't know how many of you guys have enjoyed being molested, but I did. Real, real sick. My sponsor said, you come very close to those people with grave emotional and mental disorders. You're very close. But many of them recover if they have the capacity to be honest. I said, what is capacity? She said, do you want to want? And I said, yeah, that's it. So that became my theory. I wanted to want what you had. And I began to get it because you know what? I went home at night and I went to sleep. I didn't pass out. And I woke up in the morning. I didn't come to. And the stress got a little bit less and a little bit less. And I'm walking under grace. And I'm feeling a lot of fear because I don't know about you, but when all the chemicals are gone, I ain't got no crutches. I felt the rejections, I felt the pain, I felt the horror, the memory that my life, I'm 30-some years old, and I ain't done nothing with my life. I ain't done nothing with it. And my friends have graduated, and some of them have gotten married, and they're finishing school, and they're doing these things, and they're having some happy, normal lives. And I'm out there swimming around trying to figure out, how do I come out of this hole? How can I get back in gear? And them little small voice people are just saying, come this way, do this thing. And, you know, and they don't know what the heck they're talking about because they don't know where I'm coming from. They don't need to know where I'm coming from. I need to know where they're coming from. And I need to know where they're going. So I follow them. And they take me all these places. And I learn all this stuff that I ain't too interested in learning because one of the principles of this program is humility, and I almost had a stroke when they told me I had to have humility, because I'm the baddest broad on the street, and I know I'm the biggest, baddest bee in town, and you got to stay bad unless they get you. But they tell me now I got to lay my weapons down, and I got to learn how to be gentle and compassionate and caring about the man who has, or the woman who has no feet. And I said, I don't give a kid if they ain't got no feet. I need a pair of shoes. I'm that kind of a drunk, you know, but you're trying to serve me something else. And I'm buying it, but I ain't digesting it. Because there's a difference in taking these steps and personalizing these steps. There's a difference in making them your own. And you will hear me say, my steps. I'm working with my principles. You know, and I'm so grateful that God took me, and I'm sure he did it for a reason, for such a time as this. And he said, I'm going to raise me up a little ghetto mama, and I'm going to take her from one height to the next, and then I'm going to deliver her. And in that manner, because I got a threefold disease, I need a threefold God. You know, and I need a Holy Ghost and not a Holy Spirit, because ghosts like Casper would come through doors and windows. And when I shut down, I want him to be able to get in. That's what I got, okay? Now, if you ain't got one, you know, talk to me after the meeting. I might loan it to you for a minute. But this program does not require that you believe as I believe. It does not require that you get their atheists and agnostics sober in Alcoholic Anonymous. And I learned that in the early days of sobriety. My sponsor said to me, it's none of your business who their higher power is. You just make darn sure you know who yours is. And I had a lot to tell him, so I had to hurry up and get a name and an identification, because I had a lot to tell him. There were days I woke up, I said to the kids, get up and get dressed for school. They said, Mama, you already said we ain't got no bus fare, we ain't got no lunch money, and we can't go to school hungry, and we can't walk to school. They had to go catch a bus to get to school. And I said, get up, this house is run by blankety-blank faith. And sure enough, somebody would come to the door. I became a student at Pepperdine, and I started writing. This was over at the University of Southern California. And I started writing theses for graduate students for a fee. And on that given morning, this girl called me, and she said, I don't have all your money, but I got $25. You have my outline ready? I got to hand it in today. I said, yeah, I got it ready. She came by and got it, gave me $25. I went to the liquor store, got them some breakfast, took it back home and fed them. So there were many days like that. There were many days in sobriety where I didn't have a peace of mind, where I didn't have any money, where I didn't have any hope, where I didn't have any. So I borrowed it from the meetings. I go to meetings and you guys would serve it and I'd borrow it. And one day I said to my sponsor, you know, I'm tired of this stuff. When is my ship coming in? She said, as soon as you leave the airport. Difficult to understand. But if you're in the airport, if you're kind of going to meetings and being a service and just talking the talk and not walking the walk, you get some blessings because you can stay chemically free. Yeah, you can stay chemically free. You even might get the right man. God bless me with the right man or the right lover or the right, I got the right promotion on my job. God is wonderful. Got news for you. God is God all by himself, whether you approve of it or not. And he stays God, whether you get the job or not. You know, he stays God. I found out in this program that God does not prevent trouble from coming to me. What he does is sees me through it. He said, you know, I can say, yea, though I walk through the valley in the shadow of death. And I've been through those times where it ain't so happy here. But they prepared me for that. They said, there will come a time when you have no defense. There will come a time when you have to be sober for sobriety and sobriety alone. Nobody invited you here. You did not do us a favor by coming here. They let me know that I was not embracing this program by being here. You know, because I came in here wearing men's shorts and I was not gay. You know, I came in here wearing men's shorts because I didn't have no panties. I came in here without understanding anything about being a female. Now I got whatever that stuff is me and Barbara wear. You know, that They don't even sell it at certain stores anymore. So now I'm different, you know, because you taught me how to be different. And that little old quiet mouse monster walked with me for 27 years, leading me down these roads, these dangerous roads. And yes, you're going to have some winter seasons in Alcoholics Anonymous. And yes, you may have to sleep out in the street. You know, yes, you may have, whatever it is that you got to do, you must be willing to pay the price. Because alcohol requires that you give it all you got. And any other drug that I know of, give it all you got. This program says if you've decided you want what we have, and you're willing to go to any length, let's do anything to stay sober. You got a primary purpose today. Yesterday, I was supposed to take the bar exam for entering law school. And I said to them, I have to change this. I cannot be there. I have an urgent, important assignment. And it is to be in Atlanta. They said, well, that means you won't be able to get in school in September. Hey, I'm 68 years old. I done waited all these years. It's all right. Because whenever I get there, I'm going to do it. You know, and that's why it is necessary to take the principle 4 and 5 of courage. 4 and 5 will give you the principle of courage. It gives you a proper identity before you run off and said, I am, and you don't know what the heck you are. I was anything you wanted me to be on the street. Whatever showed up, that's what I was. If I got with a bunch of astronauts, I was an astronaut. If I got with a bunch of whores, I was a whore. You know, they said, where's your beat, honey? I said, anywhere I want to go. And they said, no, you ain't no hoe. You ain't no hoe because you don't have any beat when you're a hoe. You got somewhere you work. And I didn't know where my beat was. I just stopped and did whatever I did wherever I was. You get in trouble like that. People put switchblades around your throat and stuff. They threatened to make your head be disassembled from your body. And so I'd been through all of that. And I'm over here in Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm taking these steps. And I wanted to balk on some of them, you know, because the ones that I didn't really like. Now, I love the principle of courage because I had always wanted to have courage. But I didn't want to have to go through all this stuff to get courage. And I found out these are principles that you cannot stay sober without. And you may drift and you may drab, but honest to God, I done took people from, there are people in this room that nobody's like to crawl from under the ditch, the log, and rise up and take their bed up and walk. So I know that this thing works because you know what? It has worked for me. And the reason that I'm telling you a little bit about it, God has delivered me through some things because I came in here in eighth grade dropout. We come in from a meeting. I said to my sponsor, that was an educated fool that talked tonight. She said, oh, you got jealous, huh? And I said, jealous of an educated fool? Why would I be jealous of an educated fool? She said, because you don't have any education. So tomorrow you go to school and you get you some education. She didn't tell me what school to go to, so I went to Compton Junior College and I said, I want to enroll in school. She said, what's your curriculum? I said, what is that? She said, how are you going to go to school if you don't know what a curriculum is? And I said, B, I'm here for you to teach me. That's what I'm here for. And I figured the world ought to be happy that I wasn't drunk. You know, so I didn't go to that school, of course. But I gave you 25 cents for bus fare at 9604 at that time to go find some kind of job. And they gave me 25 cents to go find a job. Said, you've been around here long enough begging for cigarettes and talking about the ain't it awfuls. Now get out of here and go find some kind of work. That's the way they raised you, you know. We let them sit there for 20 years and tell them, I understand you're dysfunctional. They told me to take your sick man and go up there on 103rd and find some work. Found a job $25 a week, and the guy gave me 2 tokens to go to Long Beach and look for a training program. Went down there, they put me in an LVN class, gave me $100. My first miracle happened in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in my entire life. They gave me $100 stipend every week, and I fed the kids on it, bought a bus card, and went to school. And then I got an AA degree, and then I got a bachelor's, and then I got a master's, and now I'm going to get a law degree. Now, if you don't think that's a big deal, try to do it. If it ain't no big deal, try to do it. Because you have to, I had to walk to school, you know, something like 20 miles. And I had to lay under the tree when y'all was eating lunch because I didn't have no lunch money. But I became a smart A-broad laying under that tree. You know, because I became the class valedictorian a couple of times. You know, so you really, if you can just get halfway committed to being made whole, not so much committed to the program of recovery, because it ain't easy. It ain't easy to walk and learn this stuff, especially when you know everything. It ain't easy when you know it all. It ain't easy when you got to keep up a front. You got an agenda already made out, and you're going to build Alcoholics Anonymous around it. Because I did. I wanted the right man, the right money, the right car, and God to make them kids behave so I could have peace. In that order. Didn't get none of it like that. Fumble around and stumble around until I decided this program is going to be my life. And when it became my life, then he started rewarding me. He started giving me peace of mind. He started letting me graduate. And I found out I wasn't going to school for a better job. I was going to school because I felt empty inside. And I had no self-esteem. You know, self-esteem is given to us. When you do esteemable acts, you get self-esteem. Since I had never done any esteemable acts, I didn't get no self-esteem. And so I'm walking under this grace around here that y'all passing out mercy that God serves down here. And these things are beginning to happen to me. I had to get a divorce in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You go through all the pain. I'm giving up my last chance at a man. I got 8 kids, and I'm damn near 40 years old. I'll never make it. You know? And a tall, dark, handsome man walked in the back of the hall one night, and he said, "They say you're having a birthday." He went to kiss me, scared me to death, and I ducked and kissed me on the neck, and oh, my God. All kinds of stuff started happening, you know, up here and down here. And I'm saying, oh, my God, what is this? I ain't felt like this in God knows when. I ain't never felt like that stuff sober. So here I am walking, you know, and I got married in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a wonderful, nice, serene husband. Gets on my nerves like lightning sometimes. So it ain't all honey, peaches, and creams. I don't want you to think that. But it is a good marriage. I have the right man for me. You know, other people wouldn't tolerate me. So I'm grateful to God for my home and for my husband. I'm grateful for all them knuckleheaded, no-good kids of mine. You know, I thank God that they're all doing the best they can do with what they got. And that I have finally arrived at that place where I want to let them do their thing. I no longer want to monopolize anybody's program, anybody's time. My spouse says he hates Jacksonville where we moved. I have made him free. I said, I love you enough to let you go. Go back to California. Get on out of here. Because I don't want to keep nobody prisoner today. I love me enough to be free. And to stay free that God has freed me. You know. And I don't want to keep anybody in prison anymore. Find out in this program that I can live with him without anybody walking. Except my Lord, my Savior, and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can do with him without anything else. May not like it, but I could. I enjoy life today. I want to skedaddle and get through here because I see y'all are getting ready to go catch these planes and stuff. But sobriety has afforded me so very, very much. God gave me little assignments, and then he rewarded me according to my ability to receive. So all you got to do is hurry up and get in the receiving line. You know, if I had known what I know now, I would have got over there a long time ago, but I didn't know. So I stayed out there half and half. But if you get in the receiving line, he rewards you with peace of mind, and then he rewards you with grace and mercy that is sufficient to any need that you might come upon. And then he rewards you with financial security so you don't have to beg and stumble and bumble no more. I gained that in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I gained it in such a manner. All of that stuff that I'm telling you about is I knew it all came from God because I had the little warnings on the way. You know, you can't have it now because you ain't ready for it. You can't have it now because you couldn't handle it. You can't have it now because you wouldn't know what to do with it. You know, and so I didn't. But I walked into a little casino, I put 5 nickels in there, and he gave me almost $1 million. Now, I know that's God's stuff. Because I just told you I've been poor all my life. Now I ain't poor no more. I carry around a $1 million bill so everybody knows so I can remind myself. And sometimes I forget and almost hand it to the clerk because I get broke and look down there, I don't see no money, and I snatch it. I say, oh, you ain't got no money, girl. All you got is this $1 million bill. You know, But it is a gracious moment to be arrived at that place where you can have $1 million mentality and $1 million in reality. Now, I have a habit of dressing my mind before I dress my body. And certainly, I would not play down anything that anybody does, but I have found it necessary to take the principles into my life every day. Because I'm lazy, I do not like spring house cleaning, so I maintain a clean house on a daily basis. Now, for this, I'm eternally grateful. Now, I know we have served you a lot of stuff here this weekend, and you said, I ain't no saint. I ain't going to jump up and down and jump into the pot, middle of the pot of soup of sobriety all at once. I don't want to be no saint. I ain't either. And I wouldn't know how to be a saint, because I got too many freakish ideas still left. But I'm grateful to God that I'm better than I was. And I want to leave you with this, you know, because it was given to me on the front of, very early in sobriety, God gave me a little meditation book, and it gave me a solution, but I didn't know what it meant. And on the front of that cover was, be still and know that I'm God. I have enwrapped myself in you. Know this, my child. This is the truth that is setting you free. And I spent all of these 33 years, one day at a time, uncovering, discovering, and discarding to get to the God in me, to get to the spirit in me, to get to the core of me, to get to the real me. Because I've been so many things, I didn't know who I was or what I was. Now I know who I am and what I am, and I ain't willing to change places with nobody walking. Quick to tell you that I don't deserve that. If you're acting a fool, I don't deserve that. You know, I respect and love my fellow man, and they in turn do the same for me. But I'm going to share this poem with you that was given to me on my first AA birthday, and it goes, bless us, Heavenly Father, forgive our erring ways. Grant us strength to serve you. Keep putting purpose in our days. Give us understanding enough to keep us kind, so that we may judge each other with our hearts and not our minds. Help us to be faithful in everything we do. Let us stay content to trust your wisdom and to follow after you. Help us as we falter, and hear us as we pray. Master, grant that we may walk hand in hand with you, with each other, each day. God bless you. Let's keep coming back, and let's keep being women, sober women.